Good morning, still. And thank you all. This is, there's a lot of women who want to know about risk-taking. This is fabulous. The turnout is really great. My name is Trissa Thompson, and I am the Chief Responsibility Officer at Dell. And this is something we are also super passionate about, is women's entrepreneurship. I don't know, let me give you a few little of the startling facts out there, that women start up businesses at twice the rate of men, and they fail significantly faster. Women get 7% of the VC funding. So, and they get 7%, by the way, of the media attention, but someone else, I think, can talk to us about that in a little bit. So we have really tall hills to climb. And some of the things that we do at Dell to help with this, we have a Dell Women's Entrepreneur Network. We started this 8 years ago, and it's a global network of women. And it's really a support network, but we also talk about access to capital, the issues that women face, how you do business in a global world, how you use technology to jumpstart your business. Michael Dell was also the advocate for the UN SDG number 8, which was talking about entrepreneurship. Those are the Sustainable Development Goals, if for those of you who are a little bit less familiar with that. And so we have a lot of interest and investment in women entrepreneurs, and I am really honored to introduce our thought leader today. Her name is, probably a lot of people already know her, Nelly Galan. And she's, the last fact I'm going to share is of particular interest to me, but she is the first female Latina president of entertainment at Telemundo, was. She's moved on. She has started multiple businesses in entertainment and also in real estate and commercial development. If I could just like have her bio, I would be so thrilled. I'm just going to take some of it and put it on mine because it's really so impressive. She has started a movement called Self-Made and a new book, so hopefully everyone will get a copy of her book. And it's just really amazing the things she has done. But so what I have to close with, though, one of her honors was being on the first show with Donald Trump and being fired February 7th, 2008. So with that, I introduce our... Oh, and one more. I'm going to do a little teaser on the next... And she'll introduce the panelists, but I have to do a little teaser. One of our panelists got started through the Dell Social Innovation Challenge. One of our panelists kind of launched her whole business with a viral video, Women Don't Poop, or Girls Don't Poop, Girls Don't Poop. And one of our panelists went from jewelry, which she still does, but to technology and creating an app. So really interesting and amazing women. So with that, let's welcome them up.
Thank you, great intro. Ladies, the first thing I'm going to tell you is, don't buy shoes, buy buildings. We have to think big. You're here to think big. We're here to risk big because the world is our oyster. Even with all the craziness we see going on in the world, this is our moment. I feel that becoming self-made is the new ticking clock for women. It's not if, but when. I just came from a workshop on retirement, and you realize that there's so much discrimination for women, and as we get older, you will be laid off. You will have your company disrupted. So today is about how do we begin, even if it's 1 hour a week, to become self-made. Because it's a must. It's not if, but when. I also want to say that I think if becoming self-made is a race and it has a starting point, the starting point is there is no Prince Charming. And I don't mean just ladies as a mate. I mean a boss, a corporation that we think is going to save us, the government, even the president of the United States. No one is coming to save us. Those of us that are older know this for sure. And those of you that are young need to not waste your time thinking that someone's coming to save you. We have everything inside of us to save ourselves. And this is our moment. And we live in a digital age that since 2008, the barriers to entry to become self-made have been shattered. And the women you're about to meet have shattered them. So without further ado, let's meet women who, like me, went and got their own chips. And I can't wait to introduce them because they're amazing. I'm going to start with Emily Nunez Kavnis. Emily, come on up. You know, in my book, I say, in your pain is your brand. Sometimes your life and what you've been through leads you to your business. And Emily is an incredible example of that because she's the co-founder and CEO of Sword and Plow, an active duty U.S. Army. She's an active duty U.S. Army officer. This company is a quadruple bottom line fashion brand that incorporates military surplus into its products. Show them your bag while I'm talking. The brand works with American manufacturers who employ veterans and donates 10% of the profits back to veteran organizations. We can't wait to hear how you did all this. Our next woman is Nicole Story. Nicole, come on up. Nicole is the VP of creative at Poo-Pourri. I mean, incredible. You know what? I've been using it. I'm a clean freak, so I've been using this product for a while. And the writer-director of their in-house production company, Number 2 Productions, which is incredible because you guys created a product and a media company. Incredible. There she fulfills the creative vision and oversees the development of this multi-million dollar brand. We can't wait to hear more about what you do. Let's give a big hand to Nicole. And Brandy Pham, I wish you were my daughter, get up here, is the co-founder and chief creative officer of, is it Planoly? Planoly. After 10 years in the fashion industry, she burnt out and she decided one day, she said to her husband, I'm feeling like I don't like this anymore. He encouraged her to quit and start her own company. Very smart man. And so she started a company, a jewelry company out of her 400 square foot New York City apartment. But on top of that, she realized she found a hole in what she was doing. She didn't have the technology to do what she was doing better. And so she created a technology platform off of her jewelry company. You ladies, I wish I could have all daughters like you. Thank you. I have no girls. I only have boys. So let's get started because we all want to hear, how did you do it blow by blow, right? We need to know from the minute you started thinking about what you were doing, you went to the Army. How did you go from being in the Army to doing this, which is to die? I just have to show it because it's so cool. Look at this. Camo inside. Fabulous. How did you decide to do that?
Well, Nellie, thinking of the idea for Sword and Plow,
I'm going to sit over here with you guys.
Really happened pretty naturally for me. I was a senior in college when I thought of the idea, and at the same time, I was an Army ROTC cadet about to graduate and commission as a second lieutenant and just begin my career as an active duty Army officer. And so I was listening to a speech by Jacqueline Novogratz, another inspiring woman, and she, during her speech, mentioned a business that had incorporated recycling into its business model. And as I was sitting there looking around the auditorium, I was just looking around and thinking, you know, what in my life is, you know, wasted sometimes? And I thought back to military surplus, and I grew up on military posts. My dad was in the Army for 30 years. My uncle was in the Marines and became an astronaut. And their military service really inspired me to want to serve. And so while I was a cadet, I also met soldiers at airborne school who expressed a desire at some point to get out of the military but wondered about what employment would look like and challenges they might face. And so those were conversations that stuck with me. And that really seemed like an injustice. And at the time, I didn't really know what to say. But all of these things just collided at that one moment. I thought, you know, I could take military surplus and turn it into something really beautiful with a powerful mission. And I looked around the room and noticed, you know, everyone uses a bag of some kind throughout their day. Why not make something really durable and beautiful that anyone would want to be excited to use? And then I thought, next, who would be involved in the process? And I thought, you know, veterans are such, you know, technical professionals and leaders. They could be involved in everything from design to manufacturing to fulfillment and even models. And so that was just the beginning. I told my sister, Betsy, who's here today.
Where's Betsy?
She's actually down at the women-owned business. Betsy's down at the women-owned business marketplace. We have a booth down there, so
she's working.
She's working.
Okay, but let me ask you a question, because I started a business at 25, and I thought I was, like, cool, and for 4 years I didn't make money. And my Latino parents were like, por favor, find a husband, you're going to lose your looks. And so I want to know, how did you go from having this idea to actually making it happen? And did you make me jealous? Did you actually make money right away? I mean, I need to know blow by blow how you did it.
Sure. So we put in a lot of hard work. We, from the moment we thought about it, a week later, we entered a business plan competition at Middlebury College. And that was really scary because I was an international studies major with no experience in business. And so I think that's an important takeaway, that you don't need a specific background or a lot of experience to jump into something new. And then we also entered the Dell Social Innovation Lab and the Dell Social Innovation Challenge, where we met amazing mentors who really helped us develop our idea. We came up with our name there and really were able to evolve the idea. And we put in a lot of time. And we knew we wanted to launch on Kickstarter because we thought that would be a great way to test the idea, test the marketplace. And so we initially wanted to launch on Veterans Day, just about 9 months after we thought of the idea. And we learned that, you know, sometimes you have to be adaptable and readjust because we weren't ready. And so we made a plan for what our goals for Kickstarter were going to be, both before Kickstarter, during Kickstarter, and after. And that's really important because I think a lot of people that approach Kickstarter sometimes start thinking about that right as they get to Kickstarter, and that's sometimes too late. So, or crowdfunding in general. And during that process of preparing for Kickstarter, we did a lot of prototyping for our products, and during that process, we talked to friends and family, and we also launched our social media even before we launched on Kickstarter. So that was a great way to build our community and to...
So you used all the tools of today.
Yes.
So just because I want to talk to the other ladies and come
sure.
back to you, from the moment you had the idea to today, how long has it been?
Almost 5 years.
And I want to know, at what point did you start making money in those 5 years?
Well, when we launched on Kickstarter in April of 2013, we started that first day. So that was...
You started making money, but you still had to reinvest.
Had to reinvest.
All right, so we're going to come back to that.
Okay.
I just want to say that what's great about your story is... one of the things I say in my book, there is all this hidden money in America, like the Dell Initiative. There is money in contests. There's all kinds of money to get started that women don't know about. And obviously, you used the social media aspect and the Kickstarter, so you're lucky. And those of us that are older, we got to get our kids to help us with all this stuff. But it's all great stuff for people to pay attention to. Oh, you read my book. It's all in there. The hidden money in America is in the book. It's government money, there's money in corporations, and there's money in nonprofits. And when women say there's no money to get started, some of it is money like the dough. You don't have to pay that back. It's a grant. So that's the first thing that you should be writing down. Let's find the hidden money in America to get started. Now, Nicole, let's go to you. Who in God's name would think poo would be a successful company? But I relate because, when we talk about businesses, it's always solving a problem that exists. And I hate the poo smell. So talk about how your creator came up with that idea and what's happened to this company.
Yeah, well, who likes the way their poop smells, right?
Nobody. Nobody thought to do it.
Guys did. So Susie, she always dabbled with essential oils, and she thought, I can trap bathroom odor underneath the surface because oil floats on water. And she spent 9 months, we have all these like birthing analogies that we use, and took her 9 months to birth this amazing product. And Susie actually is very unique. She's never taken a dime from an investor. She's somehow managed to grow. And I think she grew at a pace that worked for her.
And so she started when?
2006 was when she started formulating. She launched in 2007 out of the trunk of her car. She said she knew she was onto something. She would give it to friends and family. Anytime somebody came over, it was like, hey, who needs poop? And then she'd go and sniff afterward. But whenever she had, whenever those friends started coming back and asking for more of the product, she was like, oh my gosh, I'm really onto something here. And it's just grown ever since. She made $1 million in her first year, and we're now over 50.
Well, I knew you guys were onto something when I would get your products in gift baskets. Mm-hmm. I thought, ooh, this is really good. Mm-hmm. But how did you guys, off of this product, create a media company? Because that's your part.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, trial's huge. We still are try it free. Once somebody uses it and doesn't smell their poop for a week, they're like, I haven't smelled my poop in 3.5 years.
It is really good.
In 2013, it was a really, really a big turning point in the business. She'd pretty much maxed out the gift market and the boutique business, been at QVC on Amazon, but she was really ready to push to the next step of the business, which would be going to mass and bumping up our poopery.com direct-to-consumer sales. And she did that through, we created a video called Girls Don't Poop. How many people have seen it? Yay! Go watch it afterward. We've since created, I think, 10 videos since then, but we've, for way little money, been able to create these really high production value videos mm-hmm. and use the digital age. We don't run TV spots. We just do digital, and it's given us the power to do a lot with a little bit of money and pure creativity. Without the creativity, it wouldn't be possible.
Well, and I think this is another thing to think about. Those of you out there that are blogging and that are becoming experts and creating a brand online, this idea of creating a media company that also has a product is really a smart thing to do, because you're mm-hmm. kind of like your own advertising for your product. So I think that's something else to think about. How do you create mm-hmm. content
yes.
around your product that kind of leverages your product? Right?
Yeah, we really say we're a marketing company that just happens to sell a product. Everybody in our business, it's incredible. I love that we're a startup. We're 50 people. We're under 50. We were 15 when I started. But everybody that Susie hires ultimately wants to own their business one day. So we all have a really well-rounded marketing mind. And she requires creativity out of everybody in the business.
I also like that you said Susie kind of took her time. I think we sometimes think we have to do drastic things and like leave your job and oh my God, it's too late and I need to start a business tomorrow. You can start as a side hustle. Mm-hmm. You have to start. Do not leave your job. The side hustle has to be making more money than your job before you leave your job. So like I say to people, and I've had very successful businesses, you know, I could be all of your moms, but I work because I want to, not because I have to. So I retired 20 years ahead of schedule. Not that I've retired, because I'm going to keep working. And I didn't do it by doing anything fast. I did it by being a turtle. Slow and steady, and remember, the turtle wins the race. So you don't have to be rash or dramatic. You can do something on the side. Check it out. Test it out. My 4 years that I didn't make money, I learned so much about what to do wrong that then I got it right. See, I did 4 years of horror. So it's possible for all of us. You also have a great story, Brandy, because you've also taken one idea. First of all, you did the opposite of what I'm saying to people to do. You quit cold turkey.
Yeah.
But you had a husband that was making money. So mm-hmm. tell the story of what you did. And then and you had the Prince Charming, but I told her, Prince Charming, you know? Mm-hmm. No, and she knows. And then you started with one business and realized there was something missing and created a second business.
Yes.
Tell us a story.
So I took the plunge a few times. I got burnt out in fast fashion, private label, and I would always come home crying to my husband. And then one weekend on
so
a Friday.
So you work for other people's mm-hmm. private labels?
Yes, mm-hmm. celebrity lines. And of course, I never got the credit for anything. But I was doing everything. So I learned everything from production, manufacturing, to sourcing, and also designing. So I came home one weekend on a Friday, and I cried to my husband. He's like, you know what, just pursue your own collection. You already know everything in fashion, so just do it. Set out your goals, make your lists, and just do it. So that's what I did. And make sure you have at least one stable income before you quit, because that helps a lot. Finance is the biggest.
If not, don't quit.
Yeah. If not, don't quit and do side hustles. Like, Planoly was a side hustle until we were able to pay ourselves.
But go back to the original business.
Okay, so we started jewelry. I did everything on my own. Learn your market. I researched all the trade shows that I should be doing, all of the designers that I wanted to be next to, all the stores I wanted to be in. I set my bucket list. I wrote out all of my goals, and I set deadlines. So that's where planning comes into play. And I got into all the stores that I wanted to. But then when I got pregnant, I went through a little identity crisis where I was afraid that I would lose my career, but I also wanted to become this amazing mom, and I wanted both. And that was a really big struggle. So towards the end of my pregnancy, I decided to focus on online sales and retail instead and kind of slowly close my wholesale business. I realized that I had to do everything myself. I had to take care of my baby at home full time, and I had to schedule everything around him. And that's where planning came into play. I would use Instagram as my main marketing and PR tool, and I noticed that I would get more sell-throughs online when I posted up photos. It was around 2013, so bloggers and influencers were getting really well known, and I would regram influencers wearing my jewelry. I would shoot content during nap times and edit them, and I was very, very specific on how I wanted to tell my visual story online. So I would pull everything up on Photoshop and make a fake Instagram grid and then drag and drop it to the place I wanted to. I would schedule everything out during feeding times, early in the morning, late at night, and tell myself image one at 7:30 in the morning, and I would type out all my captions ahead of time. I did it like 1 to 3 times every single day for an entire week in advance so that I would be ahead of schedule. And then my husband saw the process and thought I was insane because he's such an efficient guy. He's a Pisces. So he's like, why don't you just build something that would streamline your entire process? Let's build a platform for it. And so I was like, okay, so how do we do this? So he asked me to list out my entire process and design the wireframes on how the perfect app would be. And that's what I did. I designed the app, the look and the feel. it's a web-based iOS and Android, and we did a soft launch last summer, and I just told all of my fashion friends, and they loved it so much that they start telling all their fashion friends, and now everyone from small businesses to big beauty brands to General Mills, Gerber, and your favorite brands use us, yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, this is an incredible story, so I'll tell you what I hear from you. Number one, when you're in a job, you have to think like an owner. And you have to every day walk in and go, is this company, if this was my money, would I spend the money this way? What are they doing right? What are they doing wrong? Try to tell them, but if they don't listen, just keep it in your mind for your future. The more you think like an owner, you're preparing for your future. And number two, I had happened a similar thing than you, that you start one business, and when you start a business, you realize, you don't even realize by mistake you run into something else. And I think this is going to be bigger even than the first business.
Yes, and also, it's me and my husband, and I wanted him to focus on full time. So I womaned up and I took consulting jobs on the side to pay the bills.
Yeah, so
at the
that's
same
what
time.
It takes. Yeah. Sometimes these things don't make money right away. Mm-hmm. One thing that I want to ask you all about, because for me, I mean, you saw that those for 4 years I made no money. I think the mistake I made those 4 years is I didn't have a team. I forgot to go to events like this. I forgot to find out about my local chamber of commerce. We try to bootstrap by ourselves and don't have the right help. How did you guys do this right or wrong? How did you get a team around you? Any of you can answer.
Well,
Your sister, first of all.
Yes, my sister.
Yeah, how do you pick the right people and make sure you're partnering with the right people who add value that you don't add?
That's a great question, and I think that finding the right team and a great team is one of the most important aspects to a successful business, and especially a startup, because you have to be so careful about where you're investing.
Yeah.
And so, yes, for me and Sword and Plow, my sister was just such a natural and obvious choice because we were both so passionate about this and our strengths really complement each other well. And we work together well and trust each other and have a lot of fun together, which is important too. And then from there, we started figuring out, okay, where else do we need help in this business and what do we not know how to do? And so we started asking friends or friends of friends who would point us and introduce us to other people that they knew in industries. And from there, people started either volunteering or helping us on a consulting basis, and those relationships evolved into part-time or full-time jobs. And so I think you start to see pretty quickly who has like the grit and the scrappiness and the passion really necessary to succeed in a startup.
How about all of you?
For us,
saying even like accountants, lawyers, how did you do the LLC, or how did you do the corporate papers? All the stuff that's really like starts freaking you out when you start doing it. How did you guys figure all that out?
For us, I was very lucky to have my husband because he came from finance and accounting and he did all the legal stuff. But we always talked about bringing in team members that really believed in us personally and then what we were working towards. So when we brought in our co-founding engineers, it was really personal. It's like you're going into a marriage, right? When you're going into business with each other. So we brought on one of our really good friends who was leaving Goldman Sachs at the time, and he really wanted to work on something that he believed in. Mm-hmm. And he took no salary for an entire year working on Planoly because he believed in us that much. Mm-hmm. And his wife, you know, she took care of everything. Yeah. So, and then our back-end engineer, he kept his full-time job and worked till 2 in the morning after hours for us.
So you got a team. And how about now that you're hearing about the legal and all this stuff, and I don't know if you know how Susie did it, but how did you guys do all that?
The legal part.
Oh.
Either one of you.
Sure. So when we first started out, we actually reached out to the veteran community and fellow veteran-owned businesses.
So because that's great. I think, but that's a great lesson for everybody too, because sometimes we have to start in our own community. Whatever that is, you know, is find out, you know, if you're Latino, if you're African American, go to the Latino Chamber of Commerce or the African American Chamber of Commerce, or if you belong to a group, to find resources from that group. Because I think the more we think we can do this ourselves, the more you really hit walls. I also find for me, since all of you are young, I think I've hired a lot of millennials because my weakness has always been social media, right? But I also see that when millennials hire older women, that we have a sense of customer service and operations and things that maybe you guys, you know, haven't had as much experience in. I think it's a really great team. I love hiring women. So to me, I feel like when we do that together and we bridge those gaps, we really do better together than apart.
And you don't want to waste your time in an area that's not your genius. Like, if you try to do it all, you're going to spend a lot of your time. You don't want me doing your accounting.
Talk a lot about Susie and you and how you guys have separate kind of fiefdoms, right?
Yeah, she's done an amazing job of, and her mindset's always been, hire to your weaknesses.
Yeah.
Use your time to do what you are amazing at, because if you're not doing yourself a service, if you're spending half of your time doing the craft that you're not good at.
So let me ask you ladies a question. So, you know, I talk a lot about fear and failure, how I've had to make fear and failure my best friends. And if you guys saw my resume, yeah, it looks really good, but my failure resume is 10 times longer. So if I didn't fail that many times, I wouldn't have 2 or 3 successes, which is all anybody remembers. Can you guys talk about your failures, your fears, like that panic? Like, people think once you start doing something, you're not fearful anymore. You're fearful every day of your life. Am I right?
Yes.
They should make that a thing, like a failure resume.
Right?
That should be a thing.
Thank you. Can you girls start it for me online?
That's where the grit comes from. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
And nobody ever talks about failures.
No.
They always talk about that one success story.
Yeah.
And not the failures. But you should face it head on, and you should be afraid every single day, but it makes you work even harder for what you want.
It means it matters.
Yeah.
If I didn't do things because I was afraid of the potential outcome, I wouldn't have done anything that I've done. Mm-hmm. I mean, you guys know that. Every day, you should be encountered with something that scares you every day. Mm-hmm. If not, you're not pushing yourself hard enough. And it's easy to think about all of the things that could go wrong, mm-hmm. but think about what could go right. Mm-hmm. And is it worth mm-hmm. not trying and having that regret of not doing it?
And failures make you actually become a better person.
Well, and let's talk, because do you want to answer that, the fear and failure?
Yes, I think fear and failure are such key themes to being both an entrepreneur in a larger company or being an entrepreneur and starting your own thing, because you're going to find a lot of challenges. And even within Sword and Plow, we've faced a lot. And I mean, I could
Like what?
Well.
Tell us.
Well, so right after we launched on Kickstarter, that was a huge success for us. And quickly, our goal was to raise $20,000 over 30 days just to fund our first large production order. And we were so excited. We surpassed that by 15 times. We raised over $312,000 and had 1,500 supporters. And we're just so excited to have this entire community to share this idea with. And so now we had all of these pre-orders to fulfill. 1 month later, I deployed to Afghanistan because most of the time, I got out of the Army, so now I'm full-time on Sword and Plow and have a lot more time to
dedicate. Thank you for serving our country.
Thank you.
Thank you.
But at the time, we were much smaller, and Betsy was back in the United States and really owning the operations of Sword and Plow, and we were really figuring out how to develop a supply chain. So I land in Kandahar, Afghanistan, and I'm opening up my computer trying to figure out how Wi-Fi worked, which was a challenge in itself. And I get an email from my sister Betsy, and I imagine it would say something like, "Hey, Em, how are you doing? Hope you're safe and everything's going well," and it did. And then after that, she said, "By the way, where did you get the leather for the piping on a rucksack?" So I respond to her, and I said, "Oh, shoot, you know, I think I just had to get that quickly for our first sample. I got that off eBay because it was challenging to find some leather sources quickly." And she's like, "Oh, eBay. eBay is not going to be a long-term supply chain source." And then a week later, we find out that the leather tannery, thank you, that we did partner with and develop a great relationship with as our long-term supply chain source went bankrupt. Yeah, so
not good.
So for the next few months, Betsy and the rest of the team and myself, to a certain extent, to the extent possible that I could be involved, had to figure out, okay, how can we find a new long-term leather tannery supply chain source? And so luckily, she found some great mentors at Clark Shoes who had a lot of leather experience, and we were able to overcome that. But that was, you know, when you have all of these pre-orders to fulfill and you find out, oh my gosh, we don't have a leather source right now, that was really kind of frightening.
Well, which leads me to, you know, in entrepreneurship, more women are starting businesses than ever before in history, but more women quit before the two-year mark. And I always say that, for me, my favorite word in the English language is completion, because I really think that if I didn't stick it out those 4 years, and the only reason I did is because the old man that I used to work for said to me, "When I was your age, I started a business. It took me 10 years. I made no money. And then I became rich." And I go, "Well, I'm only on year four." But in fact, let's talk about staying with it, because there are some dark nights of the soul. And do you think your military upbringing, in a way, does the military mindset help you with this?
Definitely. I think the military mindset is definitely helpful. I think there's a...
What do they teach you? What's the secret sauce?
Never quit. Never leave a man behind. And I think those are just so drilled into you that I think determination and teamwork and those core values are just something that, you know, you don't even think about. They're just something that are within you. And so I see so many parallels within military leadership and, you know, entrepreneurial leadership from, you know, in the military, you're trying to lead a group of soldiers to accomplish a purposeful mission. And the same thing in entrepreneurship or any organization. You're trying to figure out, how do you motivate a diverse group of people to go accomplish this mission that you're passionate about? And so the other thing is that sometimes in the military, you're training at all hours of the night or day. And, you know, sometimes in entrepreneurship, you're working with your team at all hours of the day or night.
So it really is like a boot camp for entrepreneurship, is what you're
saying. Oh, yeah. It's great. It's a great training ground for that.
Okay, so how about both of you? How do you not give up? How do you hang in there?
It's, whenever you hit that brick wall, that is when your breakthrough is about to come. It's the bigger the wall, the bigger the breakthrough.
That's true.
And I, in the creative process, there's a lot of fear and there's a lot of failure. You know, you just, you write, and you find the one thing that hits, and you're going to fall off the horse a ton of times. But it's that when you hit that wall, just keep pushing. Take a minute, take an hour, go do something that clears your mind. Take a shower. Like, that's when ideas pop in. Just remove yourself from the situation when you hit that wall and then come back. Don't give up. Don't give up. It means you're almost there when you hit that.
That's my favorite thing to do, too. Mm-hmm. Take a hot shower and just think. But, yeah, it's really hard. You're going to have to give yourself pep talks a lot in the mirror. There's going to be a lot of dark days as an entrepreneur. You do so much work, and you actually get burnt out really easily because it's a 24-hour kind of thing. It never stops, and you never sleep. Like, you go to bed thinking about your business, and you wake up in the morning thinking about your business. So you better love what you do. Make sure you pick something that you're really passionate about and you're willing to wake up in the morning for. So that's how you stay motivated.
Yeah, I find that around my worst failures have been my greatest successes. And if I didn't hang in there and get back on the horse, the greatest success was around the corner. But let me ask you, do you guys ever have a moment where you go, I wish I had a job with benefits? And all, I mean, do you have those moments? I mean, I think it's very human to have those moments. I did. You know, I had a business that was very successful, but I was living in Latin America. I was making content abroad. And I missed, I did think, I want a boyfriend and I want to come home. And I got offered this huge job running a network, and I sold them my business. And I went back to work in corporate America, and I had a honeymoon period for like 3 months, and then I thought, what was I thinking? Because then everybody was telling me what to do. But I don't think there's anything wrong with starting a business and then realizing it's not there yet, and I have to do a side gig to make money to keep my business going. I think being in both places is equally important, because you can't put yourself down and think, oh, I'm failing. It's just part of the process. So have you ever had those moments where you're like, oh my God, what did I think? Am I crazy? Was I crazy?
Almost every day past year.
See, it's good for you guys to hear that.
And my husband too, he's like, oh my God, I miss my salary.
Yeah, we
do. And all the perks, 9 to 5, you go home and you don't think about it. But it's so rewarding to have your own business and you see something. In the beginning, you're not going to see something for a very long time. And it seems like you keep on pounding the pavement and you're not getting anything back. But in the long run, you're going to get all that back, and it feels so much more rewarding than working for someone else.
If you're not sure if you're ready to start your own business, I would advise work in a startup.
Check it out, right?
Yeah, I've learned so much, and they're not like, I don't have to pay for all the failures.
Right,
it's
and
nice.
That's right, but that's important. Uh-huh. You're right. Thank you for sharing that. That's very, very important.
And I've learned about operations. I've learned about supply chain and accounting. I've learned how to run a business by watching Susie. And we've had multiple women leave the company to start their own businesses. So it's getting.
Well, and how many people
MBA
started someone else's company and then become a supplier for that company as well? So that's a possibility too. I also want to speak to the ladies in the audience that are more my age and older, because I've met so many women this year on the road that are, you know, almost ready to retire and wanting to start a business. And I don't want you to think this is a young woman's game. I think those of us that are older, I just started another business. And I just want you to know that wisdom that you have is going to pay off, because we can scale faster. And you can hire all these youngins to help you with all the stuff that we're not good at. But I want you to know that this is your moment too, to have your last hurrah and leave with a big, valuable company, because I've seen more women do that this year than ever. Let's talk about customers. We can blah, blah, blah about business all we want, and if we don't bring home the bacon, there's no business, right? How do you guys find your customers? And I also want to talk about women and diverse women. Diverse women are the number one consumer in America. So how do you find your business? You're Latina, you're Asian. How do you find these women? And how do you target and find customers?
I think this is the best time to build businesses and spread a brand awareness through social media. It's leveled the playing field for everyone who wants to be a business owner. We did zero advertising up until May before we started Facebook ads. So in the past year, it was all word of mouth and social media.
Yeah, I would echo that. We're also very much on social media from before we launched on Kickstarter. We were on social media and, you know, really looking at who our customer was and who was excited about our brand and mission. And you know, I think customer feedback and their support has been so important to both our company as well as product design. And in addition to that, we recently launched a brand champions program, which has been really exciting. And that's a program where Sword and Plow customers, veterans, military spouses are brand ambassadors and go out on social media, word of mouth, and are spreading word about the brand and also our sales affiliates where they're earning commissions on sales too. And so it's been really exciting to see how excited they are to be able to represent the brand in that way too.
Well, and you guys are lucky because this is like an area that's very kind of native to you guys, right? So some of us have to hire women like you to help us, which is also good because that's why all you young women have incredible side hustle businesses, helping women like me get our businesses going in social media. Let's talk about like the ugly part of entrepreneurship, which is raising money. I think there is not a person alive that wouldn't think, oh my God, I gotta go raise money. I've gotta ask people for money. And I have to just share with all of you, because for me that was horrible too, how I did it. I always make believe I'm somebody else. And that by now I now know how to do it. But in the beginning it was like, let me think of somebody, sometimes it's a guy, sometimes it's a woman, that is like really like entitled and knows how to ask for money. And I put myself in their body. Like I think entrepreneurs should all take acting classes. It really helps. It show, you know, like you feel like you can put on, when you're feeling yucky, you go, I'm going to be Catherine Zeta-Jones playing me in the room and ask for all the money in the world and I'm going to get it. And it's amazing how that works. How did you all learn to ask for money and go get money and figure it out?
Well, we bootstrapped all the way and we...
You used your own money.
Yeah. We bootstrapped and we were determined to keep everything minimal. When you bootstrap, you're more stingy and you become really great money managers. Every penny, every dollar is really important, so you just spend it more wisely.
But at some point, you're going to have to go raise money.
But if you want to raise money, I feel like you should ask your family and friends first because you might be more careful with your grandma's money versus a complete stranger. You'll be more conscious and more aware. But Kickstarter is an amazing platform to raise money and crowdfunding. But be prepared and know what you want.
Nicole, was your company completely self-funded to this day?
Yeah, to this day. But I will say we ask for what we want from vendors. We tend to work with our vendors for a very long time, which helps us out a lot. We get a lot of favors, and we ask for what we want, and we don't. We make sure we're not overpaying. So it's very important to pick the right vendor, and make sure you're not getting screwed over.
And to manage your money really well.
Mm-hmm, and to manage the money.
So, as I mentioned before, we initially launched on Kickstarter through that crowdfunding platform, which was a great way to launch and have initial capital to really truly start with and grow. And then following that, we did one major round of initial fundraising from the former chairman and CEO of Hasbro Toys, Alan Hassenfeld, who has a lot of...
Was that like a personal contact? I mean, how did you...
So it was really interesting. He has been really supportive of Sword & Plow since we initially launched. He was involved in helping to start the Middlebury Center for Social Entrepreneurship. And I went to college at Middlebury College, and so he knew about Sword and Plow and was really excited about what we were doing, and we stayed in touch, and so we continued that relationship, and it's been really exciting to see how that's evolved and to continue to have his amazing support and guidance.
So asking him for money, was it very hard to do, or did he make it easy for you?
I think you really need to go in prepared and know your business well. You need to be as smart as possible on your financials and on your goals for the future and how you would use any money that you're going to be raising. So it was definitely a process that took time and that we had to be very organized about. But I think you also want to be careful and thoughtful about where you're raising money as well. So I think that's something to keep in mind too, making sure that if raising money is something that you want to do, you're doing that with an organization or people that are also aligned and passionate and excited about your mission and are able to help you in ways as well. So
I think I could ask you guys questions forever and ever, and I will, but we have questions from the audience. This is your turn. While you guys are, if you can come up to the mics while they're doing that, just tell everybody here how many people you have in your company, because I think that's good for people to hear that, how lean we all are. How many people are in yours?
So we have a core team of 6.
How about you,
Nicole? We were 15 3 years ago. We're 50 now.
You have a little more, yeah, because you're a product company, yes?
We have 7. We just started hiring back in July, so as there's 4 of us for an entire year with no salary, and we just start paying ourselves in July when we were cash flow positive.
And I have 3. So you see, you can start with very few people. Yes, question.
Hi, my name's Kelly. I'm about to start my own nonprofit, and it's really exciting. I'm just kind of running into a struggle of how to kind of like do the online platform, and I was just curious if y'all like shipped everything out or how you did it strictly on social media.
Like promoting and getting the word out on social media?
Shipping out. How do you do shipping? Do you just do it with a third party?
In the beginning, you should do everything yourself before you outsource to like a fulfillment center. But also fulfillment centers, you're gonna have to meet a quota or a certain quantity to even pursue that route. So you should do everything in-house first. And for social media, getting the word out, content is king. Don't just post up anything just to post up. Make sure the quality is there and you know what, like the brand messaging is the way you want to convey your business. Everything you put on social media is your digital presence. Like, it really, really is a big factor on gaining followers and gaining customers. So just be mindful.
Within your area, you kept it local, like selling stuff out of your apartment?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Basically. You just start from where you can first.
Okay, thank you. Yes?
I have a question. I think it's more directed towards you, Ms. Galan. Mm-hmm. My question is, is it possible to be an entrepreneur if you don't have an innovative idea?
Oh, yes. In fact, come to my workshop at 3:00 because I'm going to show you all the different ways to become self-made. I would say that's the hardest way to do it and the last way to do it. Okay. There's much easier ways to get started.
Thank you.
Yes, this side.
Hi, I'm really impressed with the charitable angle in your sword and plow business. And how did you come up with decide on the 10% number?
So, thank you very much. So as we were thinking about Sword and Plow's business model, we were thinking about how could we incorporate social impact into every single aspect of our business model, from the design and the materials used to the end user and where and how we could give back to the original users of the product's materials. And so we actually thought of that part of the idea during the Dell Social Innovation Lab. And so, yes, we were thinking, okay, how could we incorporate the most social impact into this idea? And so by doing that, we're able to support veterans in several areas in addition to employment, to leadership, health, bridging the civil-military divide. So to us, it just made sense. And it seemed like a really responsible thing to do.
But then why did you not decide on 15% or 5%? I'm just trying to figure out, because you had to figure out your number to maintain your business, but enough that was considered, you know, a contribution.
Yeah, so for us, when we were starting, that was, we were trying to give the most that we could do as a very small startup. So for us, that was a very big contribution, and so we've continued to do that since launching.
Thanks.
Okay, next question.
Hi, my name is Christina Rodriguez, and I'm an entrepreneur and a blogger. And my question is, for social media, you're talking about content using Planoly a lot. I actually tried Planoly, and I didn't get it, but now that I've actually started, you know, using social media a whole lot more for releasing my content, how did you know to tell your story on Planoly? And actually, my website is Camila Cosmetics. I have a lipstick line. So yours was jewelry. You know, how did you not just talk about the product and actually just tell a story with it while using Planoly?
Okay, so I have a round table at 3 o'clock in hall 1 and 2, I think. So you should come. Beauty, which is interesting because L'Oreal brands, Estee Lauder brands, Glossier, they all use us. And it's really amazing to see how they use Planoly to tell their story and plan out their campaigns ahead of time. So user-generated content is the best way to connect with your audience and your potential customers, right? And what they do and what I did with jewelry as well, as every single thing that they plan out and post, there's some human touch to it. It's not just a model wearing a lipstick, but it's like in a lifestyle setting. So figure out your story, what your style is, and then translate it into every single photo and make sure that each photo tells the exact same story. So if you look at Alexander Wang, if you know who he is, he wears all black. Every single photo is echoing the same story and it's his style every single time, but it's just different imagery. All the beauty brands and all the really amazing brands does it the same way, like Warby Parker and Everlane. So it's really in the content.
You said 3 o'clock?
Yeah,
3 o'clock.
Thank you. Can we do more? Okay.
Hi there. Thank you. Your stories are inspiring. When did you decide to move out of your home and take the plunge and actually, like, have a space outside of your home?
So we worked from home. Everyone worked from their homes for an entire year, and then we all came to Austin in May. Our CTO came from New York, we came from New York, and we decided that we needed to be all together. And when we were cash flow positive, we decided we needed an office space. We started off at WeWork, and we made sure that everything's super, super minimal and cost effective as possible. And then now we're scouting for actual office space, but still with a budget in mind. So make sure that you are living within your means and don't overspend.
For Sword and Plow, when we first launched, our team members were in 4 different time zones. So having one central office space didn't make a lot of sense for us. So we did a lot of team calls and Skype sessions and FaceTimes. But as the team grew and we were able to centralize some of the team members to one city, an office made a lot more sense. And having an office space also allowed us to have a small showroom, which was really useful for meetings and for photo and filming opportunities.
And listen, I've done 4 businesses and I'm back in my home again. So that's a beautiful place. When you're starting a business, it's so humbling to go back to the basics and know that you're going back to being lean and that is the roadmap to your success. It is. Yes.
Hi, Kara Solis. I'm a senior at Texas State, and I have a focus in entrepreneurial studies, so it's been really awesome to hear y'all speak. And currently with my business, the biggest problem that I'm having is figuring out which way that I, or how I want to brand my business. So some of you talked about doing investors, family investments, and bootstrapping. How did you figure out exactly which way was best for your business and which path really worked for you personally?
So about funding. When it comes to funding, you have to realize that you're the only cook in the kitchen, right? When you take money from other people, there's going to be more cooks in the kitchen, more opinions, and then you're going to have to deal with all that. For us, the 4 of us, we're so good at what we do in our areas. I'm in design, my husband's operations and finance, and then we have our engineers who are strictly back-end and then mobile. So there's already 4 cooks in the kitchen, and we decided that we didn't need more people in the room. That might change, but in the beginning, we just felt like we already knew our platform, we knew what we wanted to do, and we knew what we wanted to build out, so we wanted to keep it really like authentic and core before we went into that direction.
I think control is a part of it too.
Yeah, like control.
Retaining control. Because whenever you're seeking an investor, making sure you find one that wants to play by your rules. Mm-hmm. How involved are they going to be? What
and
do they want back?
How much they believe in you.
Mm-hmm.
Baby steps.
Yeah.
Start first with you and then build.
What a great question. You were so well spoken.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I'd like to first thank all of our panelists. They're fabulous. And then I don't miss a business opportunity. I would love to invite them all to join our Dell Women's Entrepreneur Network.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
And I'm sure they will be here available if you have more questions. And Nellie will be signing books right after this. Are you downstairs?
Downstairs.
Downstairs. So thank you, guys.